This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
We're back on a Friday edition of Sharp Money, live from Bar Canada at the D in downtown Las Vegas, filling up with patrons on this Friday. Joe Serallo is with me. I'm Ben Wilson. Wyatt Tomchek, our producer, is here. You always know when it's a Friday at Bar Canada, Wyatt, because there are more people than Thursday. And by proxy, then Wednesday.
I don't know if you, the Sigma Derby, that there were some intense games going on before you got here.
I heard it.
Yeah.
They were, so, Joe, they had Sigma Derby. It was their all-star break. They were doing some maintenance early this week. But it's back up, and it is running. We can say that for sure. Yeah. A lot of
can't
activity.
Wait to see it firsthand. I've never been to Bar Canada. I'll be there in a few days. I can't wait.
There's Sigma Derby. Can't wait to get Joe out here. Yes, because you've only done shows at our main circuit studio, but it's a whole new world over here at Bar Canada. You are in for a treat. There
now
next
I know
week.
What Sigma Derby was. Shout out to our team with that camera work, because I've heard it a million times. I had no idea what you guys were talking about.
Now we've seen it. That's why we have the A team today. Matt Hicks, Andrew Ingold, our technical directors, got Chris Foster on sound. We still as Justin Monteith on graphics today again, Wyatt?
No, it was just
a one-day thing. I miss when Justin. I never know when Justin's
here.
He said
you were one of his favorites, him and Jared. He was giving Jared a lot of compliments.
Okay, so what you're saying is he boycotted today because Joe's here.
Yeah, I mean.
Okay, gotcha. Good.
Not because of Joe. I think it was just Friday.
It's Friday
in July.
Alas. When it is Fridays in July, and we'll have many more conversations like this over the next week as we get into the All-Star break, Joe. But it's a good time here to take an assessment. We just have one weekend series left before Major League Baseball, even though we're technically past the halfway point, before we get to the All-Star break, which is where a lot of times we'll take stock of the current situation of Major League Baseball and start to do some power rankings. So we will start here today, Joe. We'll talk our top 10 teams, which was, at least for me, I don't know how it was for you, it's a difficult exercise because there are a couple, you know, unassailable teams at the top, and then you can make a lot of cases for a lot of teams as you get down to the back end of the top 10 with how wide open it is this year at Major League Baseball. So I'll let you have the floor first, Joe. You can run through yours. I'll run through mine, then we'll compare our differences and get into the discussion on that. But how did your top 10 end up?
Yeah, Ben, this took me way longer than I thought it would to make this list, because after the number one spot, I'm going through every team and I'm like, they seem a little overrated there. I don't know. I could pick apart, honestly, like 2 through 10. I could criticize all these squads.
Yeah.
So let's start with 10. The Boston Red Sox, they're shocking everyone. 10 games over 500 right now. They are top 7 in both OPS and ERA. If the pitchers don't do it, the hitters pick them up. If the hitters don't do it, the pitching's pristine. They're a really fun team. You're used to high expectations in Boston. These guys play loosey-goosey. They're playing fun ball, and they're winning. It's really exciting. Number 9, I'm going the Mets here. You look at what the Mets have done. They've got the second toughest strength of schedule in baseball this year. Only 2 teams in the top 8 have a winning record in terms of top 8 in strength of schedule, and those are the 2 New York teams. So the Mets get some points for strength of schedule. They also have the best record in baseball since May 30th. It's not a 2 or 3 week sample size. We're talking a month and a half. They have the best record in baseball. That earns them points too, gets them to the 9 spot. 8th, Ben, your Brewers, man, they are overperforming everyone's, or I should say over exceeding everyone's expectations. And you know the brand, like, not your father's root beer, right? Well, the Brewers, they're playing your father's type of baseball, man. They're hitting singles, they're stealing bases, they're pitching, they're playing small ball. You know, they lost Council, Stearns, they lost Corbin Burns. Everyone said that they were going to fall apart, and they've done the opposite. Give them a lot of credit. The Minnesota Twins, they just passed Milwaukee, probably because of recency bias. This team is just one of the hottest teams in baseball. In their last 10, they actually might be the hottest. Their offense is top 5 in every category, and despite their starting pitching turning in some down years, their bullpen's picking them up. 6th is the Yankees. They probably should be 2nd or 3rd, but they're 6-17 in their last 23, so that docked them a few spots. Starting pitching falling back down to earth in an ugly way. The lineup gets really weak after the top 4, but they still have Judge and Soto. You can argue, you know, 2 of the top 3 MVP front runners in the American League right there. So that keeps them afloat at 6. Number 5, Atlanta. They lost Strider. They lost Acuna. They could have packed it in. Instead, they've had guys like Ronaldo Lopez and Chris Sale step up in the rotation. The lineup's been mediocre. Matt Olson having a down year. Austin Riley having a down year. But Marcelo Zuna, all of a sudden, a triple crown contender in the NL. So he's holding the lineup together. And then I think they deserve a lot of credit for what they're doing in the field. By far the best defensive team in baseball. Defense gets forgotten more and more every year. The Braves are doing it better than anyone. Number four, the Guardians would have had them higher, but the fact of the matter is the bullpen's covering up a lot of warts right now, and I don't know how sustainable that is. Their starters, they have five starters who have made 15 or more starts. They combine for a 4.63 ERA. Starting pitching's atrocious. Bullpen's best in baseball. The lineup, little inconsistent, but mainly top half. I still like this lineup a lot. Stephen Kwan, Jose Ramirez, a scary top three in that lineup. Dodgers coming in the third spot. I mean, when you look at all the starting pitchers that they're without, it's actually pretty impressive, despite the fact that in terms of ROI, if you bet $100 every game, they've lost you $640 this year. No Ohtani, no Kershaw, Bueller has stunk, no Tony Gonsolin, Yamamoto's hurt. They've been making do with really suspect starting pitching, great bullpen. Top half of the lineup is scary, bottom half, like the Yankees, kind of a mess. Orioles, number two, most complete team in the American League. They've had their fair share of injuries in the starting rotation. John Means, Kyle Bradish, yet the next man up thing is kind of working for them with the pitching. And in terms of offense, they've got more than 20 home runs. They lead the league. They've got 21 more homers than the Dodgers, who are second place in home runs. So a lot of pop in that lineup. League leaders in OPS, scariest lineup in baseball. And then the Phillies, best ERA in baseball. One of the scariest lineups, I'd say top three scary lineups, certainly up top when you have Schwarber and Trey Turner and Bryce Harper. That's a terrifying first inning. And in terms of a short series, once October rolls around, their pitching is going to be the scariest with Wheeler, Nola, Suarez, you know, whoever that fourth guy is right now, likely Christopher Sanchez. Spencer Turnbull was great earlier in the year. The Philadelphia Phillies, this was the easiest on this list. Yeah. 2 through 10, have your debate. Phillies number one piece of cake.
I'm with you that number one, pretty unassailable. You could also make a case at number two because of the weaknesses of, you know, any other top candidate. As you looked at it further and further, Joe, you're like, okay, it is Baltimore, even though you can pick some holes in that club. That was also my one and two. So that was where that's where our similarities align here. I believe, as we'll throw up my graphic here again, we're talking MLB power ratings as we get ready for the All-Star break here. I had a couple of two differences, and they're both, as you would expect, toward the bottom half, the bottom end of the top 10. I left the Mets out mostly because of the pitching just concerns me long-term. You expect them to be very active at the deadline, certainly, but the Mets were a team. Yeah, pitching staff wins above replacement tied for 23rd. Expected fielding independent pitching tied for 25th. I still have concerns that the Mets are kind of in a, you know, buy high kind of position right now, even though the strength of schedule numbers have been really impressive. So I saw it in San Diego to the back end of my top 10, and granted, they have been an unbelievably frustrating team, but you cannot argue against the sort of talent that they have on that roster. They have good leadership in a manager in Mike Shildt, and I expect San Diego to take a step forward now as we get into the second half of the year. They've been kind of treading water. You've been waiting for them to really put it all together. 1 week, the bats look great. The next week, they're gone. 1 week, the pitching staff can't get anybody out. The next week, they're throwing up quality starts left and right. That is a team at the end of the day, though, especially within the weakness of the NL. I expect as we get into the second half, we will see the true color show, and San Diego is poised to not necessarily overtake the Dodgers in the NL West, but poised to pull away and occupy one of those three wild card spots in the NL. The other team that cracked my top 10, I did have Milwaukee 9, similar to where Joe had the Brewers at number 8. The Kansas City Royals, who at this point, sample size is good enough to this degree where I wanted to include all three teams atop the AL Central. I do believe Kansas City has earned that position. It's going to be an absolute nail biter between them and Boston. At least that's the race right now for the final wild card spot. I have some questions about the durability pitching wise for Boston. They've been so amazing all throughout this season. The second best staff in many regards throughout baseball with great, great seasons from Tanner Houck, who's a legit Cy Young candidate in the AL, and a bullpen that has been rock solid. It just concerns me that the level is, it's such a degree that I wonder against a very tough ALE schedule how that will hold up back end of the year, where Kansas City's staff, I mean, the starters alone have been so good that they have been able to get by, even with a lineup that hasn't exactly been super scary at times. That's really what I look at when you're talking about longevity of teams, and I do like Kansas City's ability to stay very competitive within that wild card race. Again, rest of these teams were pretty similar, Joe, as far as the actual order here. Twins 7 for me, Guardians 6. I kind of just punted there on the AL Central, Joe, because as you said, it seems like every week somebody's hot in that division. So I went Guardians 6, Twins 7, Royals 8. Yankees slide to 5 for me, Dodgers at 4. I guess the surprise for me would be Atlanta going up to number 3. I still believe, even though the hitting has been so bad, that there is enough to like between the pitching pieces, between the defense that Atlanta will find a way at the end of the year. I think the note I wanted to really bring up, though, Dodgers, they slip behind the Braves for me because over the last month or so, Dodgers starters, 0-6, 980 ERA, nearly a 2 whip, and a batting average against of over 350. How about that? That's how bad it's gotten for the Dodgers.
Yeah, the Dodgers starting pitching has been a major concern. You got to give guys like Gavin Stone, well, guys, I mean, right now in terms of healthy players, he's the only guy to give credit. Glasnow is fading, and then they've got a bunch of no-names out there on a daily basis. They should have never lost the game to your Brewers that Dallas Keuchel was starting.
Alas, it happened. That's the state of the Dodgers right now in 2024. All those numbers I just listed to recently, those are all dead last among starting rotations in Major League Baseball. When we come back, a fresh hour of Sharp Money. We'll begin our AFC North breakdowns in the NFL.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now at VSiN.com, we have all sorts of best bets, including exclusive articles, betting splits, odds by state betting tools and betting guides. Lou Finicaro, who's just on with us, he has his breakdowns for UFC Fight Night in Denver tomorrow night. And Mike Somich will join us in about a half hour in studio, on set, however you want to phrase it, in the bar at Bar Canada. Mike Somich, he's got his plays for Saratoga rest of the day today. Saratoga getting underway yesterday. A lot of great action there on the racetrack in horse racing as we're back here on Sharp Money. What also figures to be a very hotly contested, great action-packed division this year, Joe Serrallo, is the AFC North. We start by breaking down the Baltimore Ravens. You know, I suppose on one hand, it's very tough if you're a bettor to really love Baltimore, think they're going to go over 10.5, and also feel the same way about Cincinnati, right? Like, that's just kind of conventional wisdom. If you're going to side with one, you're probably going to have to go down on the other. But I've learned not to assume here, Joe, so we'll pitch you here on the Bengals as the second favorite, just slightly behind the Ravens by about 5 cents, but they share the same exact win total of 10.5. And what's nice for Cincinnati is they do get the last place schedule here, so that's the one real big benefit. But so much is expected automatically with Joe Burrow back healthy at quarterback for them to reemerge as a very good team in the AFC. How do you see it going here in 2024?
Yeah, this one's tricky when you look at the win total. Everything in me wants to go over. I think that there's certainly a 10-win team. But Ben, this win total play is a stay away for me because, you know, to me, this is a 10 or 11-win team. If I'm going to take an over, that means that I see that team going over that total by 1.5. I'm not going to bet it if I think that they're going to go, you know, a 10.5 win over under. If I think they're going to go 11, it's a stay away. If I think they go 12, maybe even 13, like I do with Baltimore, then it's a play. But with Cincinnati here, you know, the schedule's favorable for sure. You look at the Patriots. Now, Joe Burrow, for whatever reason, historically has stunk weeks 1 and 2. He's got to get a week 1 win under his belt here, home against New England. You know, Commanders at home, at Carolina. You've got games, you know, home against the Raiders. To me, what really could be the difference maker pushing them over that 10.5 mark, when you're dealing with the AFC North, first of all, I just assume 3-3 against your division. That's what you have to assume in that division. 3-3. And then do they win all the games they're supposed to at Tennessee, you know, home against Denver? And then can they split with the Chargers and Cowboys in those two road games? Or, you know, actually really what it comes down to is, can you go 2-1 Eagles, Chargers, Cowboys? You go 2-1, you're definitely going over that 10.5 mark. If you split the Chargers, Cowboys road games, you can still get to 11-7. And that's assuming 3-3 and assuming, you know, they beat, you know, all the bad last place teams on their schedule that they're frankly supposed to beat. It's just, it's a lot to ask. You know, you're asking them to essentially not have a slip up. They're a team that even if they go 10-7 and get a wild card, I think can be very dangerous in the postseason. I love this team. I'm not knocking this team. I just don't know if I have the conviction to bet over 10.5 because it's a lofty number.
Sure. The first place a lot of people will start to talk about, Joe, it is the protection of quarterback Joe Burrow, who now comes off of the injury, and that's really been the storyline of his career. It's, can he stay upright? And there's been so much invested in this Bengal O-line. Once again, they bring in some pieces in the offseason led by Trent Brown. Also, you spend a first-round draft pick on Marius Mims to help fortify the offensive line. A lot of the early returns on positional rankings, if I look at Sharp Football, they have the Bengals tied for 9th in their offensive line rankings, but with the caveat that Orlando Brown just simply has to be better. He was 30th out of 35 left tackles in pressure rate allowed a season ago. And you're talking about a blindside protector for one of the most important players in all of football in Joe Burrow. That's probably where this handicap, you know, really begins on the offensive side. It is an offensive line that has been plagued by underperformance and injury over the years. Do they finally get back to that level of consistency we saw when the Bengals made their Super Bowl run a couple years ago to allow Joe Burrow to stay upright and not have to worry as he makes his return from injury? That's where I'm, as much as I feel like there is reason to be optimistic, I still can't go and commit all the way that I feel super confident in Cincinnati's O-line holding up and being great all year to a top 10 level.
Yeah, and you know, it's actually impressive last year that all things considered with the Burrow injury that they had a winning record. But if Burrow gets hurt, you know, if he misses 3 weeks this season, you can probably forget that 10.5 mark. Yeah, the O-line's concerning. Orlando Brown really can't be much worse than he was a year ago. And the thing is, Ben, you know, you talk about the O-lines, they certainly got it together. They got their stuff together a little bit during that Super Bowl run, but they still weren't great. They almost made it to the Super Bowl in spite of the offensive right. line that season. So you need to see vast improvement. I will say, you know, I do love the weapons. Losing Joe Mixon hurts because not only is Joe Mixon, and last year he had a down year in terms of productivity, but what he does really well, and he continued to do well last year, is Joe Mixon's a great blocking running back. So now losing that, Zach Moss doesn't really add much in terms of blocking in the backfield, but I love the addition of Mike Gesicki. I'm probably higher than most on Gesicki. I've always really been high on him and loved his game. And, you know, they lose Boyd, but they bring in Gesicki, obviously different positions, but equally as good of a weapon for Joe Burrow, a better weapon than Boyd when you look at the red zone. So I think, you know, the offense is going to have some firepower. It's just a matter of, can Burrow stay healthy? Can he stay upright? I worry about him being a little fragile. And, you know, you see him walk in the runways at the fashion shows in Paris, and that makes me think he's slightly more fragile.
There you go. We needed the hot take on the fashion statement.
The backless jacket that he wore in Paris.
Let's be honest. I think Joe, he likes Mike Gesicki because of the gritty. Come on, you got to admit.
You know, actually, it's because he's a Penn State guy. I'm a huge Penn State fan, so that's all that it's got to do with for me. I watched him a ton in college, but the gritty doesn't hurt.
I guess I won't tell you that I'm a big Michigan fan, but go back to the offensive line. I mean, we're going back in the past, but really felt like if they had a decent offensive line, I felt like the Bengals should have beat the Rams in that Super Bowl, right?
There were so many moments, where they could not. Protect on the biggest of plays. It happened on the final drive where all of a sudden you're getting pressure right in Burrow's face, and next thing you know, it's a fourth down and the game is over. That's a totally valid point on the O-line as we're talking Bengals season outlook here on Sharp Money. I also look at the defensive side of the ball, Joe, and we were so high on a DC and Lou Anarumo who took that defense to previously unseen heights. And that was another big reason why Cincinnati made that Super Bowl run to take on the Rams a couple years ago. But last year, you look at the final numbers, 28th rush defense, 28th pass defense, dead last, and that's on an EPA per play basis, dead last in yards per drive allowed, dead last in yards per play. That has nothing to do with Joe Burrow, right? As much as they were out on the field more because of a backup quarterback and shoddy offensive play toward the end of the year, you still can't excuse how bad it was for Cincinnati. If you look at the positional rankings here, PFF, 13th best D-line, 14th best linebacker core, 14th best secondary, despite losing Chidobe Awuzie at corner, losing DJ Reader on the D-line. They do add Sheldon Rankins at defensive tackle and Geno Stone at safety. That, to me, as much as we want to focus on the offense, Joe, defense can't get by being a bottom five unit and expect them to win double-digit games as is projected here in 2024.
Yeah, you're 100% right. You look at they had a December matchup with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the Steelers were just throwing the ball all over the field down their throats. It's like, if you couldn't stop Pittsburgh's passing offense a year ago, you couldn't stop anyone. And I would point out, and I would argue, Ben, that, you know, you're 100% right. You look at that, or Wyatt, it might have been you, when you look at that Super Bowl and the way the offensive line crumbled there in the second half when they were put in really good position early in the third quarter with that immediate touchdown to Higgins down the left sideline. The defense that year, I think, was more responsible for that Super Bowl run than the offensive line. The defense was really playing great ball second half against Kansas City. Almost the entire game, practically, against the Rams, the defense was great. Last year, defense, different story. And by the way, quickly on that Super Bowl, I was in the I had a great view of that atrocious offensive line play. I was at the game second row from the top at SoFi. Nice. I don't know if you guys have been to SoFi. It gets high up there at SoFi. It gets steep. Second row from the top. And that last play where Burrow had to rush the throw on fourth down would have set him up in field goal range. I mean, the offensive line just didn't have a chance. They just, you know, the Rams blew that play up instantly. The offensive line's been a problem there for a long time. The defense was was really helping Burrow cut them some slack, get him the ball back. If neither of those are clicking, things could get ugly, but I think the defense will come around. I think the offensive line's probably the biggest question mark.
I'm still bitter about that game because I took the Bengals money line. It was there. I could taste it.
Wyatt, how about this? I had the Bengals money line, and well, I also had them with the spread, which cashed, but I had an 11-leg parlay that went 10-1. Oh. It was $10 to win $1,500. And do you know what the loser was? Cincinnati, second half, over 10.5 points. They had 10 on their first two drives in the third quarter, didn't score the rest of the game.
Would have paid for the Super Bowl ticket. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say,
that was a freebie.
Oh, that was a free. I was going to say, second row from the top. That'd be like, what, $5,000 to $10,000?
You could have been in the actual top row. I mean, you did pretty well. I remember about that. I remember there was a lot of wild on the betting side because of the fact that the Rams won the game outright, which a lot of people had their money line, or I remember like you could take them in game money line at a much better price. And then also Cincinnati covering on the spread. Unfortunately, Wyatt, still slightly bitter about it.
You were watching that game. We were downstairs at South Point.
Yeah, we were. That's right. We were together at the venerable South Point for our live.
I can't remember. You had a bet, and you kept complaining that.
Oh yeah, no, I had a bet of both teams. No, I had a bet of there will be all three timeouts taken by one. All six timeouts taken in the game by one team.
That's right. I just kept hearing Ben, take a timeout.
And McVay used all three timeouts in the first half, and it used two in the second half. And I'm like, hey, call a timeout, man. Set up your defense before the fourth down, and they get the stop. And McVay had the Bengals got the first down. Maybe McVay uses a timeout to ice the kicker, and I win, but it didn't happen.
Right.
Anyway, yes, random bets of Super Bowls past that we, for whatever
Love
reason,
it.
Remember for all eternity. When we come back, we'll wrap up the AFC North division discussion as we continue here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back in, everybody. Third and final hour of Sharp Money. Hanging out on a Friday from downtown Las Vegas. Bar Canada at the D. I'm Ben Wilson in for Patrick. We have Joe Serallo with us from the great state of California. Wyatt Tomchek, our producer. And for the next half hour, he's made it over. He's brought a lot of patrons with him, clearly, as a Friday heats up here at Bar Canada. Mike Somich, co-host of The Handle. He's in town from Santa Barbara. Great to see you, man. You're back.
Yeah, love it. Happy to be back here in Las Vegas. It's been almost a month, which is just wild since it's been almost every single weekend. Starting to ramp up for football season, so be here for 3-4 weekends in August. Then it's going to be pretty much every weekend through January. So excited to get football going again. I love the dog days of summer because I like betting on baseball. But man, every now and then you just sit there and you're like, all right, let's kick off the season here. Let's
Seriously.
Go.
Seriously, Joe, one of my favorite pastimes from this last football season, I would usually do our live bet football show from right here, Bar Canada. So you make the walk back down Circa. Usually we'd hang out, have a drink, watch the end of the games. A lot of times I'd walk to Circa as Mike's show right after us was getting done with Matt Brown, and I would see Mike, Matt, Steph, the producer, having their their post-show cocktail. It was just a great bonding experience to run into those guys and be like, hey, how's the Sunday night betting going? And you just kind of go in. So, Joe, I can't wait for you to be a part of that this fall because it is a time to be alive here. Once you get – it's like football season, like the crowds here, it is unlike anything we will see, of course, at any point this summer.
Oh, I bet. I can't wait to be a part of it, man. I just made my first trip to Circa in April. We'll be making my second trip on Sunday for all of next week, but haven't experienced a football Sunday in Circa yet, so I can't wait for the fall time to roll around.
Let's do it. I'm excited for it. We were talking AFC North today on the show, Mike. You heard the last little bit of our discussion starting with Baltimore. The favorites, Bengals just slightly behind, both a couple 10.5 win teams, and then you have Cleveland and Pittsburgh each at 8.5 there with Pittsburgh rounding out the divisional odds. Where do you stand, AFC North, on a division that is always so compelling from top to bottom with the talent that's in that league?
Yeah, it's extremely compelling, especially after last season where we saw everything with Burrow. He's not able to make it even to really the start of the season. So we get a shell of Burrow throughout that year. You get an interesting Bengals team because of it. And the love that they have gotten to me is a little above and beyond what I think they should be getting. So you assume that, oh, hey, he's going to say he likes the Ravens. The Ravens kind of ran pure last year. It felt like everything that could go right for Baltimore went right. They lost something on the defense there this year. So I'm not sure you're going to see the same Ravens team that you saw last year. And then I go down to the Cleveland Browns. And I completely understand the argument around Deshaun Watson. But if you take out the quarterback in this division, top to bottom, the Browns roster is significantly better than the rest of the division. I'll take the Browns wide receivers over everybody except the Bengals. I'll take the Browns defense over everybody. I think there's a ton of talent on this Browns team, and you don't need Deshaun Watson to be a top 10 quarterback for them to be able to compete inside this division. Right now they're sitting at plus 600. I've got a Browns future ticket on them to win the division. I also played them over their win total. To me, that it's just not a properly priced division. I think all this should be more like the AFC East, where you've got three teams that are sitting there that are all around that, you know, I think it's plus 160, plus 190, plus 200 type level. There should be a little more separation to the Browns, but I don't think that they should be 4X the price of the other two teams that are atop this division right now.
Yeah, that was the thing we were just laying out, Joe, as much as we are kind of down from an offensive perspective. You look at the positional rankings, though. Fifth defensive line. These are PFF that just came out within the last couple of weeks. Eighth best linebacking room. Sixth best defensive backfield. You think about that DB, you know, defensively, you're usually accustomed to seeing a team like that more priced in the double-digit range. We did mention it just briefly, Joe. We touched on our thoughts on the Browns, but you can give the rebuttal here if you would like on why Cleveland, you do like them to go under this year.
Yeah, Mike, I think it's interesting. First off, we agree on Cincinnati. I think that they're a little overhyped coming into this season. I just need to see more out of their offensive line. The defense took a tremendous step back. So I'm with you with that. I think where we disagree is, you know, I'm still incredibly high on Baltimore. And this Cleveland team, you know, you say that you'll put their receiving core up against anyone. I got to be honest, Amari Cooper, probably the best receiver when you take the Bengals out of the equation. Not probably. He is the best receiver between the Ravens, Browns, and Steelers. But after that, this receiving core is not that impressive to me. I think that the Ravens receiving core might actually be deeper than Cleveland's. And Nick Chubb is certainly a heart attack, but it's just a matter of his health. They might be too reliant on Chubb because you said take the quarterback out of the equation. For me, you can't take the quarterback out of the equation. And I don't trust Watson, and that might make them too reliant on Chubb. I also think losing Harrison Bryant might actually hurt them more. I don't think enough people are talking about Bryant. He was a great target last year for any of the five quarterbacks who they plug and played and had step in there. I think losing him is going to hurt this offense a lot.
Yeah, I could see the issues around Chubb especially, and I understand where you're coming from. Zay Flowers could take a nice step forward for Baltimore. I have issues where it's Isaiah Likely and Mark Andrews. When they were both on the field, they couldn't figure it out with both of them in Baltimore to be effective down the field weapons. Andrews has been hurt the last couple of years, so I don't trust that he's going to be around there. And I don't trust the receiving core that much outside of Zay Flowers in Baltimore. I agree with your points on Jerry Jeudy. He was wildly frustrating in Denver. He had games where he looked like he was one of the best receivers in the NFL. And he had games where it looked like he didn't want to even be out there, where he didn't even try. There were situations where he couldn't get a second foot down multiple times last year, where I think I could have probably gotten 2 feet down on catches. And it's things like that when you see it that are just insanely frustrating. But when you look at this Cleveland team and what we heard last year and the narrative around them with the five quarterbacks and all of that, no one talks about the offensive line injuries they had as well. This was a very banged up offensive line the second half of the season in Cleveland. When healthy, this is a top five offensive line as well. I think that will help them produce, and I expect Chubb to get better as the season goes along. I think he's not someone you can count on week one, but by week seven, week eight, I hope that you get the version of Nick Chubb that we saw two seasons ago. And Ford wasn't bad when the offensive line was healthy, and so the offensive line being healthy here early in the season is a key to me. Yeah,
Mike Somich with us, your co-host of The Handle, Saturdays and Sundays from noon to 3 p.m. Eastern time over at Circa. I just pulled this up just as the intermediary here. Just to compare, just from, you know, Sharp Football, PFF, they have their position by position rankings. Sharp has Cleveland 13th, Baltimore 22nd, PFF Cleveland 18th, Baltimore 23rd. Again, that's not the be-all, end-all. I'm just pointing out what a lot of respected people are saying on the wide receiver front. But I think very compelling cases to be made for both. As far as Pittsburgh, that's the one team we haven't gotten your thoughts on yet. Is this finally the year that the voodoo magic runs out for Mike Tomlin, if you're high on Cleveland in general?
Yeah, I don't know what Pittsburgh does to be very good here. Another very good defense, right? So it's going to be one of those teams that has to rely on what they've relied on, really, the voodoo magic that we saw from Tomlin last year. It seemed like whenever they needed a red zone turnover, miraculously, the opposing quarterback just threw the ball right to him. And I can't count on that continuing to happen for Pittsburgh. And then you look at the schedule. The back half of this schedule is an absolute meat grinder. Like, it's going to be very difficult for them to go any better than 3-5 through their last eight games, I think, would be a success for this team. And so with that in mind, that means you have to start out very, very good. And even the early schedule, I don't think, is as gettable as you'd like. I mean, you do have teams like the Broncos. You've got the Chargers on that schedule, but I'm a little higher on the Colts than most. You still have the Cowboys and Falcons. We'll see what happens with the Jets there. It just feels like this is a Pittsburgh team that has to be, you know, 6-3. They have to be 7-2 heading into the back half of the schedule if they want to compete. And if they are that, I will be ecstatic because that means I get to bet someone else to win this division at a much better price because Pittsburgh is not the team I want long term.
Yeah, I don't know, Mike. I think that the Steelers team, look, and tell me if you agree with this assessment. I think when you're dealing with the AFC North, you have to look at all these teams when you're looking at win total projections and say 3-3 against the division is just where I'm going to start there. Because I think if you start assuming one team's going to win five, one team's going to, like last year, what was Pittsburgh? 4-2? And they were not an impressive team, but 4-2 against their own division, 2-0 against the 13-4 Ravens. So that's where I start. And then I just look at, you know, to me, coaching matters. And I know Tomlin's not out there on the field, but take that week one game, for instance, in Atlanta. That's a spot I like Pittsburgh. I think, you know, they've even though they've got a new quarterback room, so do the Falcons. And the Steelers, to me, just have more continuity. I think Atlanta's a team that's going to take a while. To me, a lot of people are way too high on the Falcons. I think they're going to take a while to kind of mesh and gel together. I could see that being a spot where the Steelers as underdogs went outright week one. I do think that there's a way that they're going to squeak 9 out of here. And I also, like I said last segment, I love the value there, plus $1.35.
Yeah, the plus money on the over is what makes it interesting, right?
Sure.
And I have not bet over or under on the Steelers yet, and I'm probably not going to get to the window. To me, they're a team where I want to watch this in season. What I love to do is send myself calendar invites for a lot of these teams that pop up after a specific week that I want to look at betting them. And to me, the Steelers, after that Colts game, if they do beat the Falcons and they're 4-0 before playing the Cowboys, and they should beat the Raiders, and they've got the Giants before their bye as well. But that's when I'm going to look at an in-season under for them because I do think it gets significantly harder post-bye for them, and I want to get involved when I get a better number than what it's currently sitting at. And so if they are able to pull off the week one upset, great. Go 4-0. Give me a chance to enter the market when I think I have an advantage because of how the schedule sets up.
That's a great little pro tip. You get the old, you know, usually we're getting our dinner reservations instead reminders. Instead, Mike's got reminders on checking in-season. In-season markets, which is a very smart way to do it. Speaking of some of these markets, though, Mike, you are interested in, there's at least one, all the different options are so tremendous for us to parse through, especially a longtime bettor like yourself. What was the one market that you found yourself salivating over the most when you looked at these season-long props?
I love the rushing leaders market this year. I think it's super interesting because you've got McCaffrey at plus 275. I don't disagree he should be the favorite. But he shouldn't be that short in a market, especially when you have all of the talk in San Francisco about them trying to throw the football a little more, keep McCaffrey fresh for the long run in the season. He's also going to be a target out of the backfield, so that takes away from some of his rushing yards in certain situations. And then it's an offensive line that has no depth. If there is one or two injuries on that San Francisco offensive line, watch out. It's going to get a lot harder for San Francisco to move the football. I respect guys like Jonathan Taylor. I respect guys like Saquon Barkley. But to me, there's some value down the board here. I have a bet in on Kyron Williams at 12-1. I think he's a great look in this spot. Went averaged over 100 yards per game once he became the bell cow back for the Rams. We all know McVay wants to run the football. He is going to consistently get the carries to do it. And there's no one to take away those carries in the backfield either. So Kyron Williams, 12-1, really interesting to me. If Nick Chubb were healthy, 25-1 seems like a crazy price, but I just don't trust he's going to be healthy early enough to win this. And I think Bijan at 12-1 and then Jahmyr Gibbs at 20-1, also interesting looks. The problem with Gibbs is sharing the backfield with Montgomery. It's going to take away some of the carries.
Yeah, if you were looking at the, you know, the running back with rushing plus receiving where McCaffrey would be a giant favorite, all of a sudden Gibbs at the very least would be a little bit more attractive because of that 20-1 right now. I'm kind of, even with that though, the fact that, you know, we have our Green Bay Packer co-owner here on the show, Wyatt Thompson, but I mean, Josh Jacobs, 16-1, is he really going to be, I mean, come on. Should he really be in the top, eight of the odds?
I don't believe that Josh Jacobs is going to get the workload that we saw Aaron Jones get at the end of the year.
That at least surprised me. And that to Mike's point, why this market kind of all over the place so far in the leading rushing yards category for the NFL this year. Great NFL talk here with Mike Somich. We will wrangle him to stick around with us for one more second. We're going to talk some MLB daily bets on the card for Mike. Talk some general overarching themes now that we're up against the All-Star break here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
The NFL preseason kicks off in less than 1 month, and lucky for you, the VSIN experts have been hard at work this offseason putting together our all-new NFL betting guide. To access this invaluable guide, you need to be a VSIN Pro subscriber. For a limited time, we're offering an unbeatable deal. You get a full year of VSIN Pro for just $199. It's normally $240, and as a special bonus, we'll add an extra month for free. That is 13 months of VSIN Pro for $1.99, and it gets guarantee access to everything we offer, including daily best bets, round-the-clock video content, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and all of the betting guides like our NFL guide. Just head on over to VSiN.com/subscribe, promo code SHARP, and you get that 13-month deal for $199 with instant access to our NFL betting guide. Also, the college football guide, our release show. Coming up, mark your calendars, July 31st. That's hot off the press, is Mike Somich, so get ready.
I love it.
I know you're hard at work.
I can't wait for this college football season and the release show. This is one of those where every single time I look at the college football standings now, like my mind melts
because
I'm just not used to these teams being in these conferences and the games that you're going to see. And there's not too many terrible travel spots yet. But in the years down the road, you're going to see some brutal back-to-back games for West Coast teams on the East Coast. It's just naturally going to happen. It's just a new aspect of handicapping college football.
Seriously. I believe Delaware State, Hawaii, your first official game of the season.
Oh, what a travel that is.
Yeah. Quick question.
Just a quick bus ride, right?
Just a quick bus ride for the Hornets. I believe, is that the Hornets? Yes, I think it is. Delaware State.
College football guy? Football? The video game?
Oh, NCAA football. I used to like build my own team, and you play all the D2 schools that first year, so you have a huge recruiting year, and then you get all of these great players in that have actual names.
Oh, wow. You can cheat the system.
And my buddy and I used to play. He would play quarterback. I'd play wide receiver. He'd play defensive end rusher. I'd play safety. We're just picking passes off. Oh, it's beautiful.
Are you breaking the nostalgia and getting this year's, or...
I don't think my wife would play to be the computer, so I think that might not fly for me.
Got to start training the child, you know. That's always an option. But
we got her on Mario Kart right now.
Okay,
so we're starting small.
You know,
moving into it.
As I always like to say, if you can conquer Rainbow Road, you know you can conquer.
There's like eight of them now. It is wild. Like growing up with like Mario 64 and you played one or two on SNES. Like okay, great. There's these specific sets. Now you buy these things and you get like. It's like 16 different sets of four tracks.
Wait, really?
All that have been on previous ones. And there's like 10 Rainbow Roads. Like I talk smack to my little nephew. He's like, let's play Rainbow Road. I'm like, no. This isn't Rainbow Road.
Like,
we're playing
one?
My Rainbow Road.
Yeah. Joe Cirillo, noted sports, only sports video game guy. I don't know if you're a Mario Kart guy as well, but I feel like you have to be.
I did used to play Mario Kart on my Nintendo DS. I've also learned recently because when I moved a couple months ago, my girlfriend dug up her old Wii and we were playing Mario Kart, and she criticizes me for saying Mario. I've recently learned that New York is the only place in the country where you say Mario. Like we have Mario's Pizzeria, a well-known pizza chain back in New York. Everywhere else it's Mario, and it's like nails on a chalkboard whenever I hear Mario. It drives me nuts because it is Mario. It will always be Mario. Mike, to your point, Rainbow Road, I might have thrown a Wii controller a month ago because of Rainbow Road.
Mario Kart Wii.
That went south, and I was like, let's just go back to Wii Tennis so I can kick her ass in that.
Yeah, there you go. Mario Kart Wii, underrated console game, at least for the Mario
like
Kart
a
with the wheel.
I was trying to make a left turn, and I'm like, I got my whole body contorting.
That's great. That's what happens. That is life there with all the old school Wii games. We're here with Mike Somich, your co-host of The Handle, talking some Major League Baseball right now in our last few minutes together. Joe and I are doing our top 10 power ratings just going into All-Star Week. And I think a big question for a lot of people is how far do you drop both the Dodgers and the Yankees with how rough of the last couple of weeks it has been? And you get the Dodgers here who go fresh off a sweep of the hands of Philadelphia. Seems like the sky is falling. Worst starting pitcher, ERA, WHIP, batting average against, and walks per nine of anybody over the last few weeks. Now you get Tarik Skubal on the road. So is this a buy low spot for you on the Dodgers, or what do you do against the AL Cy Young favorite?
Yeah, this is a buy low spot for me. Look, I tried to run my numbers like four separate ways to come up with the Dodgers sitting at plus 125, which is what they are right now in the market against this Tigers team. And every which way I did it, it was plus 110, plus 115. The advantage from the Dodgers side and from an offensive perspective to me offsets a large part of the advantage with Skubal on the mound versus Paxton, who's more than capable of a pitcher against this specific Tigers lineup as well. So whenever you go through this and you see minus 148, like I get it. The Dodgers have not been playing good baseball. Skubal's your AL Cy Young favorite. Sometimes the bet you don't want to make is the right bet. And this is one of those situations where if everything I have is pushes this out, it might bet plus 110. 14, 15 cents of advantage is more than enough for me to take a shot. So I'll take the Dodgers plus 124 tonight.
Mike, your logic makes perfect sense. I wanted to do the same thing at that value, but Ben knows after a couple Sundays ago, we were on air. I took Paxton and the Dodgers in a pick'em in San Francisco and quickly found myself down 7-0 in the third inning. So I can't do it with Paxton, but I think Skubal's a little overhyped. So I like your logic there. I'd like to say I'm riding with you. I'm not, but I'm rooting for you because I don't think Skubal should be the Cy Young leader. Let's stay, though, in the American League. Orioles, Yankees, Gerrit Cole. I've enjoyed every second of watching him struggle since he came back from injury so far. I've got a near 2-1 ticket from, you know, March on the Orioles to win the AL East when everyone was anointing the Yanks champs of that division, forgetting seemingly that the Orioles finished 18 games ahead of them a year ago. How do you cap this one?
Yeah, this starts with Gerrit Cole in a lot of ways. When I went on this morning and looked at the total, it was sitting at 8.5 for this game, and I kind of scratched my head because you've got Cade Povich on the hill for the Orioles, not exactly a lights-out pitcher here. Both offenses very adept and very able to hit the baseball. And so really this total is sitting on Gerrit Cole and what you expect from him. I don't expect too much right now. I don't know how you can. I mean, we've seen him multiple times on the mound now. He had low velocity in one game. He was getting shelled in another one. I don't trust Gerrit Cole to be that guy who can go out and throw 6-7 innings of one-run baseball against an elite offense in Baltimore, especially when this is positive hitting conditions with the current temperature there and the weather. So for me, this is one of those rather easy ones where I popped in the over 8.5. I took a little bit of over 9. Now we're sitting at 9. I would still play the over in this spot. I thought this should be closer to 9.5 with both of these positive valued offenses against pitchers that I think are very ripe for the picking right now.
Yeah, and if you shop around, you can still find a couple books have a juiced 8.5 out there, -120, but you could also get even money on a 9 over at this point, depending on the book. Their huge series in the AL East as the Yankees have slipped now behind the Orioles. Baltimore favored to get the 1 seed, favored to win the AL East. A big, big series, to say the least, there at Camden Yards as we're talking some Major League Baseball here. Just from like the general perspective, before we get to your last play, Mike, you know, Dodgers, Yankees, it's easy to obviously rip when they are, you know, sort of the, you know, the big bad boys of Major League Baseball. And it's very nice and comforting to watch a team like that with all the payroll behind them struggle. Where do you sit on them just from like a very long-term perspective here as far as actually wanting to buy as we get toward the second half of the year?
If I was going to buy either of them, it's the Dodgers. The Yankees, to me, I still don't trust Aaron Judge. Just going to stay healthy for the full year. Yeah. I still have issues with this Yankees lineup when he goes down. We saw them absolutely fall apart without him in it last year. On the Dodgers side, the lineup is still stacked. They've got players that they can come in. I expect both these teams to try to make a move. I think the Dodgers are more likely to be able to pull that off with what they've had to be have to be able to give up closer to the deadline. And then I look around the structure, right? Well, the Dodgers have to get out of the NL, and the Phillies are playing good baseball, but the Braves are not what we thought they were going to be at the start of the season because the injury bug has hit them. And you look at this Yankees team, I want no part of the Orioles. I mean, this is a very, very good baseball team that has a plethora of assets to go improve their bullpen, to go improve their rotation at the trade deadline. The Orioles, to me, should be the favorite in this division, should be the favorite right now in the AL, and I don't want to buy the Yankees on a dip when I don't see the moves that, like, everything went perfectly for them, and this is the position they're in. Yeah, they had a bad stretch here for about 3 weeks or so, but everything prior to that was just roses. Everything came up smelling perfectly. And so if I'm going to fade either team, or if I'm going to take a piece of either team, to me right now it's the Dodgers because of the way that the whole thing sets up for them in the second half.
I think you, me, Joe, we're all on the same page. We are really buying Baltimore, especially for this home stretch run.
Yeah, we're all buying Baltimore, and I agree with the assessment of buying into the Dodgers more so than the Yankees. I mean, look at what LA has done. Yes, it's been ugly. Ben, you cite all those atrocious starting pitching stats, but they haven't had Kershaw yet. Mind you, they're down Ohtani. He's not coming back this year, so that's irrelevant. But Yamamoto is coming back. Walker Buehler, I think, could be a good addition to the bullpen if he comes back later on in the year. I think him as a starter, just forget about it for the season. He's been horrendous, but I think he could really help their pen come the postseason. Yankees pitching, I don't see it getting better. Carlos Rodon, something broke when Boone left him in too long against the Red Sox a few weeks ago. Nestor Cortez has come back down to earth. I don't trust Stroman long term. I think the Dodgers certainly have more to look forward to than the Yanks. Mike, you got one more play for us out not too far from me down in Anaheim. Angels, Mariners, Tyler Anderson going to the All-Star game for the Angels against Brian Wu, who, smaller sample size, but sub 2 ERA, part of that incredible Mariners rotation. What do you like there?
I like the Mariners in this spot. They're sitting at -135 for the game, but I want to focus on this starting pitching matchup. You mentioned Anderson going to be an all-star this year. Right now at 2.81 ERA, 1.18 whip. But if you look at everything else, you look at his past stats, I mean, this is the second lowest ERA he's ever had in his career. He's consistently been a pitcher who's around that high threes, low fours type of ERA. I don't think that this is the Tyler Anderson we're going to see for the full season. I do believe in Wu for the Mariners here. If you focus on just the first five, and I talk about this all the time, I love first five betting because I'm handicapping starting pitchers. I want to know the knowns of the bet. And to me, that's playing the first fives here. I like the Mariners. I'll lay the half run first five, get +100 on the Mariners first five minus the half run.
I think Tyler Anderson still the biggest regression candidate out there in Major League Baseball. 5.05 xFIP, 4.47 xERA with a 2.81. At this point in the year, you don't see that all that often. He is Mike Samish. Give him a follow at the Salmo Bomb 18 as he joins us here. Follow him on the at the handle as well all weekend long. Great to have you back in Vegas, sir. Good to see you.
Oh, excited to be back.
We'll continue to talk some fun Italian foods with Joe Serrallo when we return here on Sharp Money.